The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Support for this show comes from Inner Engineering, a program to empower every human being with the tools for well-being from the distilled essence of yogic sciences. Visit www.innerengineering.com to learn more.
From Spirituality and Health magazine, this is Essential Conversations. Our guest today is Dr. Alan Hamilton. A graduate of Harvard Medical School, Dr. Hamilton has held professorships in neurosurgery, radiation oncology, psychology, and electrical and computer engineering at the University of Arizona. He currently serves as executive director of the Arizona Simulation Technology and Education Center, a multidisciplinary think tank at the Arizona Health Sciences Center. His second book, Zen Mind, Zen Horse, The Science and Spirituality of Training Horses, won the Nautilus Gold Award in 2012, and an excerpt from his newest book, Lead with Your Heart, Lessons from a Life with Horses, appeared in the September-October issue of Spirituality and Health magazine. Dr. Hamilton, welcome to Essential Conversations.
Well, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I have a copy of Lead with Your Heart in front of me. I certainly have a copy of the essay that was, the excerpt from the book in the magazine. And I took a look also, because I'm just fascinated by what you do, with Zen Mind, Zen Horse. So I've got lots of questions. Probably, I don't want to get lost in the weeds with this, but I know nothing about neuroscience and even less about horses. So I think you'll be able to inform, I don't think I'll say anything that will stump you. So let me start with this. In the Spirituality and Health excerpt, it's called Peace Lessons from a War Horse. You open with your grandfather's teaching that human beings are at our core fundamentally predatory. I just love that. We are fundamentally predatory. Then you say that our predatory nature today is literally killing our planet. And what we desperately need to do is to honestly confront ourselves as predators and then deal with that fact of our existence. So I need you to unpack this a bit for us. What do you mean when you say that we are fundamentally predators?
Well, let me see if I can give you an analogy, which is sort of how I work. I sort of start with the animal world and the horse world, and then I kind of look at my life and the lessons that apply. So let me see if I can give you an analogy. If you think about thoroughbred racing, a minute, you think the horses start off in this claustrophobic box, the gate. Their gate swings open. They all kick off. They're all running. They're all trying to see if they can get to the front of the pack because that's the safest place to be at the lead. And, in the meantime, they're getting their rumps whipped and everything else. And then they get across the finish line and everybody goes, okay, now it's all over. And they all go, wow. Now, if I contrast that with the greyhound race, okay, same thing start, but now the greyhounds have to have a mechanical rabbit to chase around the track. That's the fundamental difference because horses are motivated by the notion of peace and tranquility. And the idea is the best life gets is being out in a pasture with a few buddies. And as far as the eye can see, there's no threat. The predator has to get something. We have to be going after something. We have to be looking to acquire something. And so in a way, it's almost like the predator's all wrapped up in the idea of what do I get? What's in it for me? While the horse is really after, when do we get to this moment of peace and tranquility where the pressure's off? And we say if you want to be different, you have to see different. Well, seeing the world through the eyes of a prey animal is a very different perspective than seeing it through the eyes of a predator. And what the prey says is, look, we have to be members of a herd. We have to have a communion. We have to be thinking of what's the common good for all. And the predator is always saying, no, it's eat what you kill. Who cares what happens to the other guy? As long as I am fed, that's what matters. And so if you think about we've been very successful as predators. We're the uber predator of the planet, but we've gotten to the point where that strategy over the last 2 million years especially the last, 250,000 years, has really run its course.
So really, just listening to what you're saying, and I'm thinking about this predator and prey, there's no one who's really, no animal's really preying on us. We prey on ourselves, right? I mean, it's gotten to the point where we are our own worst enemy, it seems like.
We are. And in the process, we've predated on everything on the planet, whether it be the natural resources or the life forms on this planet. I mean, we're facing mass extinction unlike anything that has happened in 65 million years since a meteor hit the planet. 90% of the species are disappearing because of us. But the other thing is, we don't stop there. We prey on our own species. If you think that, 3.5 million children will die of starvation this year, literally, while a whole part of the world has an abundance of resources. So, in essence, the herd animals are saying, when are you going to change your perspective? This strategy that you've been playing, yes, it's been wildly successful, but it's run its course. You've devoured the planet. You're killing each other. You're wiping out the life forms on the planet, and you're going to have to start thinking as a herd if you want to survive.
Okay, that sounds nice, but this is built into our evolutionary psychology. So, is it possible? I have two questions, I guess. One, is it possible that our nature is such that we are an evolutionary dead end, that we eventually will, we will become predators upon our own species until there's none of us left or so few of us left that we no longer impact the rest of the planet? And if that isn't the case, or if we're trying to not do that, how do we change our essential, DNA, this predatory nature? We just can't say, okay, I was a predator, now I'm a cow. I mean, is that possible?
I agree with you. I think there's two questions in there. The first is, yes, it is in our DNA. But you have to remember, we have made a lot of changes. We have basically bypassed DNA. In other words, it takes 100,000 years for us to bring about mutation, 500 to 600 generations, to give you some idea of a biologic mutation. But if you think about it, if the Earth is warming up, let's say, something like a fruit fly can adapt to that very, very quickly. We won't. Not in 100 years. Not in 500 years. Not in 10,000 years. So what do? We say, okay, I need to build more air conditioning. We have bypassed the force of nature, largely because of our intellect, our language abilities as predators. So we have to say, yes, it's in our DNA, but we have a pluripotential brain that allows for us to look at things and make decisions and anticipate the risk. So we know, for example, that the Earth is warming up. We know that if we could stop all carbon emissions today, it would take 1,000 years to get the carbon dioxide out of our environment that we've put in the industrial age. But we know that's happening. So we turn around and say, can I change my predatory nature? Well, as anybody says, if you want to start global, you start local. You start with yourself. You say, can I change my predatory nature? And one of the things the horse says is, yes, you can. You can if you're mindful. You can if you're aware. And one of the things is, I can teach you how to become more mindful of your predatory attitude. And horses are great at tuning into when human beings get predatory. And they sort of turn off and they go, no, you're not thinking about me anymore in our partnership. You're thinking about what you can get out of this. And that's where the partnership begins to break down.
So I like the idea. The horse is our guru here. But I just have a lot of trouble accepting the fact that we'll do this. I mean, even if we start local, so I start with myself and I make whatever changes. I get myself a horse, so Mr. Ed can talk to me and tell me what I'm doing wrong. And I start to make changes in myself. If it's going to take 1,000 years to clean the CO2 out of the atmosphere, don't you think it's in a sense, it's too late that we can't, obviously not. You're hopeful and I'm just skeptical.
Well, I mean, you know, we have this ball, this beautiful blue ball that we're on, and it's Earth. The likelihood that we'll get out of this solar system is pretty small. I mean, it's possible, but it's pretty small. And I go back to George Carlin, who says, don't worry about Earth. She'll shake us off like a bad case of fleas if she has to, you know.
Right. Well, that's what I think.
You know, this is our spaceship. We're, you know, as Carl Sagan said, this is our spaceship, is this planet. So at a certain point, we're going to go, wait a minute, we've got to change. So let me go back to local. Let me go back to the horse. Now, not everybody has to get a horse.
Okay,
what I'm saying is the lessons that you can learn from a horse can be applied in your life. Okay, so for example, what happens when you learn to clear your mind and breathe? Okay, so it's very hard for me to tell if somebody's cleared their mind and is really truly letting the energy drain out of their body. But I can watch what happens to a horse and say, now you've got it. Because when you truly drain all the energy out of your body, that horse will come to a stop. That horse will be on the rail of the round pen and he'll come towards you. And if you don't believe me, go take a look on YouTube. You'll see a whole bunch of videos that I shot. You'll see there's one recently on my website where there's a horse that just got bitten by a bee or a fly or something, and he's really worked up. And I just show on the video how I can just calm that horse down by using my breath and slowing myself down. And, you know, as Peter Matheson said in The Snow Leopard, the very breath we take is the lesson that all great teachers have been trying to show us. So, you know, what the horse is doing is saying, you were connected to all the life forms around you. All skills to reach out and be in communion with all of that are still there. You just have to become more aware. And one of the things is the horse is a great teacher. There are many other teachers. People learn from nature. That, you know, I'm not saying you have to have a horse to do this. I'm just saying the horse is a vivid, graphic reminder as a teacher. Because the horse says, I'll show you what happens when you change what's going on inside your mind and inside your body.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, getting a horse, I was trying to be funny.
But, no, I know.
But let me try it. Let me take another thing that you can learn from horses or that I just found absolutely fascinating. This is from your book, Zen Mind, Zen Horse. It's a quote. For humans, the absolute unwavering honesty demonstrated by horses can be a terrible threat. That's because as humans, we are born liars. So I just love this, the way you put these things. So we are predators and we are liars. How do we deal with it? First of all, let me ask you this. Are we the only species that lies?
You know, it's an interesting question. So let me go from the horse to the dog. It's interesting that in Native American folklore, as I said in Zen Minds and Horse, those are the two animals that the creator at the very last minute put to stand alongside the two-legged. So can animals be deceitful? Well, not really. I mean, a horse doesn't pretend to be your friend so you get in real close so you can knock your block off. Okay, the horse is going to say, I don't feel friendly towards you, and I'm giving you every sign of that. Dogs can be a little sneaky. For example, my dog won't reach up onto the counter and take my sandwich when I'm standing right there. Okay, but he'll wait till I'm out of the room, and then he'll look, and then he'll go, okay, now. It's not that he's a liar. He just understands, hey, that alpha dog is out, so now I can grab the scraps of food. The thing is that animals don't deceive. They really don't have this agenda of, you know, I'll trick you into doing something. Okay. They present themselves really as they feel, and no animal more than a horse. Even when you're scared of a horse, the wonderful, beautiful thing about their honesty is they go, then be scared of me. That's okay. But don't think I don't know that you're scared of me. So, you know, I've dealt with people who are completely phobic about horses. So I'll start off with, can we stand outside the round pen? Are you okay with that? Great. Okay. Can we stand 20 feet away if you're right behind me? Great. You know, then I said, can I touch the horse while you stand right behind me? Great. But every step of the way I go, don't ever do anything that you feel uncomfortable with. because the horse knows it right away. So every step of the way, we have to be honest and say, am I comfortable with this? And it's a refreshing thing because you don't have to lie about yourself. You don't have to lie about yourself to anybody else. You don't have to lie to yourself.
So I don't know if you can answer this briefly, but what is the evolutionary benefit of being a liar?
Well, you have to remember that very often it allows us to, if I can lie to you and steal something that I need and steal a resource, then I have a better chance of getting my genes into the next generation. One of the things that where lying came about is because we have this incredible capacity for language. Language has taken us over completely. And with language, we acquire the ability to lie. We acquire the ability to misdirect people through the verbal descriptions. And, you know, think about it. When do you and I mistrust somebody? When what that comes out of their mouth does not line up with what's coming out of their body. So I go, wait, that isn't exactly what they feel. They're not telling the truth.
So lying allows us to take your sandwich without having you having you leave the room first.
And not only that, when you come back in the room, or if you turn away, I'll go, I don't know who took the sandwich. It must have been that guy over there.
It wasn't me.
I wouldn't take your sandwich.
Blame the dog.
It was the dog. Right.
All right. So I mean,
I wiped my mouth, but it was the dog.
Yeah, right. It was the dog. So, I mean, this is really fascinating. And as always on this show, we're going to run the clock and it's really annoying. So I want to bring up another aspect to this that you raised in the Spirituality and Health magazine article that I think is apropos just because we're a week away from the United States presidential election. And in the article, you said, training horses teaches us that we must be of service to the horse. The trainer must be of service to the horse. And then you expand it and you say, leaders must show that they will put the welfare of their partners, the herd, in front of their own. So we're about to elect a new president of the United States without picking sides or, you know, talking about individuals. Do you get the sense that politicians in general or the presidential candidates in particular are really willing to put the welfare of the herd, you know, the country, ahead of themselves?
Well, I want you to think about the people who inspire us the most. The ones who inspire us the most are usually the ones who somehow connect with us and make us feel like they understand our problems. You know, one of the things that's interesting to me about herds is if you become the alpha mayor, you have to go out and scrounge food, but you have to look for food for everybody. It isn't enough for you to go, I got here first and that was great. Sorry, you guys didn't have enough. And same thing with water. And the lead mayor always pushes the herd off to the side and confronts the danger herself. So she earns the right to be, she is basically, the leadership mantle is bestowed upon her by the herd because she has demonstrated that she will put her interests behind theirs. She will risk herself. And one of the things a horse looks for in a trainer is, are you willing to, when we confront things that spook me and make me feel like I want to flee because that's my major defense, am I going to see you exposing yourself to that danger first?
Wow.
Okay. So that makes a horse go, okay, well, if you're, you know, so if I say, look, I know you're afraid of walking on this tarp, let me put my foot on it first. Then I can train that horse to walk across that tarp because the horse says he put himself at risk first.
Right. Well, look, I absolutely get it. I think it's beautiful what you're saying. And I don't think there's a politician who's about to do that. When there's a danger, they go behind the young people and send them off to face it. And
yes,
you know, it's totally different.
And you know, and I was thinking the other day that Bob Kerry was on, you know, and he is a Congressional Medal of Honor winner. And I thought, boy, talking to somebody who's won the Congressional Medal of Honor, if that person is talking to me about what our men and women in uniform, and I'm a veteran myself, you know, that person is talking directly to me, not as that somebody who's really understood the dangers that we expose our men and women in uniform to. So I think that's one of the things that we're looking for is enough with the shows of bravado, enough with the talk and trying to make us believe what we, you know, that what you're saying instead of what we're feeling. I think that's one of the big disconnects in this year's election is we look at these, the two candidates, and we go, this isn't registering as completely authentic with me. And you know, that's an important part of the trust issue. So I think, you know, with the horse goes, if you're in this for yourself, I'll know it right away.
Wow. Very, very interesting. We're going to have to leave it there because we are out of time. But for anyone who is listening, who is thinking about moving to Canada, just move to a ranch with horses. Just live with horses. That's your best bet. My guest today was Dr. Alan Hamilton. He's the author of Lead with Your Heart, Lessons from a Life with Horses. An excerpt from the book appears in the September-October issue of Spirituality and Health magazine. You can learn more about Dr. Hamilton's work at his website, alanhamilton.com. Alan, thank you so much for speaking with us on Essential Conversations. This was absolutely fascinating.
Thank you for having me, really, truly.
Well, it was our pleasure. Thanks. Support for this show comes from Inner Engineering, a program to empower every human being with the tools for well-being from the distilled essence of yogic sciences. Visit www.innerengineering.com to learn more. Essential Conversations with Rabbi Rami is a project of Spirituality and Health magazine. Please log into spiritualityhealth.com to subscribe to the magazine in print or digital formats and download the iTunes app for this podcast. Essential Conversations is produced by Ezra Baker, and our program coordinator and executive producer is Alma Tassi. I'm Rabbi Rami. Thanks for listening.